Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and pleased to welcome back the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture and Gardening Haiku Poet, Erwin Goldman, also a UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture, and it's great to have them back as we get into, Christmas is, the holiday season is with us, and I know my thoughts always turn to vegetables.
Well, it's root vegetables, and those are coming right out of many a storage cellar, I would think, at this time.
That was Jim Nienhuis, by the way. Thanks for coming, Jim. Erwin, thanks to have you. Thanks for coming, too.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Well, what are the traditions that you guys have with vegetables for during the holiday season? Erwin, do you have...
Jim and I like to participate in a little rutabaga curling during the winter on Lake Mendota. We clear out a little space, and the rutabaga turns out to be perfectly sized for curling. Jim, one of the things that Jim does is he takes a class of students down to Costa Rica to see tropical vegetable production.
Yep.
And they do that just around the end of the year, beginning of January. So that's actually a really...
But we can't do a rutabaga curling
there. There isn't very much of that.
No.
No, there's not a whole lot of that. Well, rutabagas. There's even a song, I understand, about...
There's a rutabaga song.
Many. And, of course, the Cumberland Rutabaga Festival, in which we're looking forward to those calls coming in from Cumberland.
We were hoping to be part of the Cumberland Rutabaga Festival parade this year, but we didn't get that phone call. Next year.
Oh, I thought you got it. I naturally assumed that you got it. Yeah,
the king of the festival, I think you were hoping to be.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was the king and queen, and it was kind of a, there was some issues there about who would actually, what role, each of us would play. I don't remember that. And then, there is the pastry.
Yes.
Which I'm not going to go into any detail about, but let me say that it must be carefully spelled.
The pasty.
If you look this up on the internet, especially during the class period,
you can
really significantly embarrass yourself. I found this out. So there's some careful spelling that we want to be into the pastry itself.
This is, of course, the pasty filled with rutabaga, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's the thing.
You fill your pasties with rutabaga.
Yes.
Well, it's a vegetable, right? And then there's meat. And there's in the Upper Peninsula, or the UP, there is the, there's like the pasty conglomeration, right? And they will ship to your home within 2 days.
Yeah.
And you can get an array of them. I looked that up, and I was going to order some. In fact, for the show, they might be arriving before the show is over, but we're going to have a couple of pasties come in. So they'd be terrific.
Well, have you tried? Now, last year, you did. About this time, I recall that you had no knowledge of Cornish pasties.
We've learned a lot in the last year.
We can learn. We're not that evolved.
Yeah.
Just because we can move forward. Now, of course, within the short distance, short time span of 1 year, we've now become really. In a professorial, we are, after all, professors. So, after all, we become very quickly resident experts on nearly everything. And so now we are. I think we pretty much command this.
Do you know anything about root cellaring? We've got a question here from Ann in Appleton.
Does Ann have a root cellar?
I don't know. Let's go. Ann, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am new to Wisconsin. We just moved here and bought our first home, which is 105 years old. And one of the things we discovered about the house is that it has this room in the basement, which I believe used to be a root cellar.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's very exciting.
If the real estate agent had known that, you would have spent 10% more. They would have jacked the price based on that amendment alone. The fact that you were able to sneak that one in here. Now, the question is, where did you move from?
Virginia.
Okay. Well, that's not, that's still in the United States, isn't it?
Yeah. All right. So now your question is, how do you use the root cellar?
Well, first of all, I want to make sure that this room, it has shelves in it.
This is a canning room, probably.
Inside the foundation of the building, it looks like a root cellar. Okay. But I want to make sure that it actually has what it needs to have a root cellar before I, sticking a bunch of vegetables in it.
It may be a canning room.
Yeah. What's the temperature? Is there a register in there or not? Heat register?
No. There's
Well, you wouldn't want one, I don't think.
No. But many older homes have rooms that are specifically designed for canning because you want to, you know, you don't want to freeze the jars, but of course you want to keep them at a low temperature and you want to prevent light. So many older homes have that, and I had to add it on to our basement because it didn't come with that.
And the shelves are kind of a giveaway that maybe it wasn't exactly a root cellar, right?
Because root cellars are the things that we used to do, you know, years ago on the farm, right? We used to we would preserve, you know, root vegetables, carrots. We would lay down straw. We would dig. I would be out there in the fall digging a pit. Basically, and you'd line this with, you know, sand and sawdust and straw, and we would have roots, storage roots, heavens, you know, well into, it would have to really, really, really get cold until they would freeze, but you would.
But you need a cooler, you need somewhere, what, 40 degrees in that area?
Right, I would say between 35 and 40 degrees would be perfect. Yeah. And as Jim mentioned, you do need something that's going to absorb moisture, so whether it's straw or pine shavings, or sawdust, or even paper, heavy paper, like a paper grocery bag. But you need something that's going to absorb moisture.
How much of that would I need to have in there? It's a fairly sizable room. Do I need to have that all over?
I had this mental image of your room, though, being for canning, not a root cellar. Unless there's places where you can, I mean, my father used to get tomatoes, right, mm-hmm. before the first frost. We would hang them in the basement, mm-hmm. and we would still have tomatoes.
What's the room? Is it about, what, 10 by 10, or is it?
It's, I would say maybe like 4 by 12.
Okay, long and narrow. Hmm. You might be able to close off part of it. Mm-hmm. And make one end of it a root cellar, where you could put some straw or whatever down for the moisture, and just close that off. That could work, wouldn't it?
I would think it would. I mean, another thing you could do, and we've had great success with lots of different kind of root crops, is you take a large paper grocery bag or something like that, fill it with some wood shavings, and put the roots in there. Then you kind of close the top of the bag and place the whole bag in a big plastic bag. And what you've done there is you've created a microclimate. So you've got moisture that's coming off the roots that's going to be absorbed by the paper and the wood shavings. And then you've got the whole thing wrapped in plastic so that it can store. And you can actually store carrots like that till April.
Oh.
As long as it's cool. You're going to need temperatures that get close to 35 to 38 degrees. So I don't know if your room has that capability.
Will they sweeten as well, Erwin?
Those won't get any sweeter because I think the sweetest they're going to get is when they're, you know, it has that, it's that issue. But there are other plants that will get sweeter with cold. There
what is about a the rutabaga? Do you think that
rutabagas
will they sweeten? Will they cold sweeten?
I think they'll cold sweeten. I don't know that they'll get any sweeter in storage, but I think they'll cold sweeten in the
field.
You
know, I can't. You know, I mean, immediately knowing that there's even a possibility of the rutabaga cold sweetening, I feel that our listening audience out there might capture a haiku.
Yeah, that is a lyrical. You
know, that is a lyrical thought. The sweetening rutabaga itself. I would also suggest, Ann, that you, if you're not into canning, you can stop by my house here in Madison, and I have this kitchen. Lord knows, I'm there principally to drive the property values down in my neighborhood. Really, you can't imagine what it's must like to live near me. But but canning is like, if you're not into this, I'd have to say it's the most.
It's fun.
I mean, you open up a jar, honest to God, right now, I will go home this very evening, open up a jar, and, you know, in summer, full summer sun, and the smells and everything of Wisconsin will come bursting out of that jar and will be laid down on my, over my spaghetti. It's just a miraculous thing.
I do feel a poem coming out.
I almost heard one.
Could we combine those? No, those don't combine well. The sweetened rutabaga and the springtime. No.
That doesn't work. But Ann, if I tell you what, I liked Irwin's idea with the bag and the sawdust, and You might be.
Yeah, that sounds very doable.
Yeah, and well. And you might have to, you know, you check the temperature down there. You might have to insulate the inside of that room to keep the heat from the rest of the basement out and make it cooler.
Right, you do need it very cool.
I mean, think of all the vegetables you can preserve. You could preserve
carrots, potatoes,
onions.
Onions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Beets.
We actually experimented around with it a little bit, and I was able to successfully preserve a cabbage. Mm-hmm. Wrapped it in newspaper with a couple of rubber bands.
Yeah.
And yeah. Put it down there, and 2 weeks later, it was just as good as, you know, sure. fresh. It was incredible.
I think cabbage would store is a great storage vegetable, and I think your idea with the paper helps. But you could preserve beets, you could preserve garlic, you could preserve onions, you could preserve carrots,
this is,
right?
This is all due to the miracle of saran wrap.
It is.
Really, you know, better living through chemistry.
Well, you've probably heard more than you needed to hear, Anne.
I'm overwhelmed.
So we'll let you go, and thank you very much for calling. Happy holidays. And by the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org and call in with your question. Or if you got a haiku, I have a haiku from Becky from Columbia. It's at the Portage area, actually. So Becky has her haiku. And remember, this is 5, 7, and 5 syllables, if I'm not mistaken.
We're flexible on that.
We've been flexible in the past. December is the title of this haiku.
Okay.
And it is snow-covered garden, a freezer full of berries. Can't you taste those pies?
Wow.
I like that one.
I got one this morning. I got an email in on a haiku, and this was... Peggy thought of this during a particularly bad thunderstorm. Here it goes. And she apparently thought of us. Why would they make that association? I didn't think about that earlier.
It's a bit troubling, yeah.
It is a little troubling. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, she goes, flash, start the countdown. Close or away, far or near, sheet metal thunder. Now, apparently, this, again... Why does this associate with us? You know, we are the vegetable guys, after all, right? But I thought the sheet metal thunder might have something to it could be. It could be the sound of our voice over the radio waves. Right. Sounds a lot like sheet metal thunder.
Well, we have one more from Martinson, and I just emailed in a haiku. Working the garden, bright sun and insects abound.
I don't have those in mind.
Waking to winter is the last line.
I thought it would end with rutabaga.
No, we haven't gotten any of those yet. Marie in Appleton has something for us, though. Hi, Marie.
Yes, when you spoke about how joyous it is to open a jar in the cold, there's a lovely song by Greg Brown about grandma's canning. Do you know it?
I want to hear you sing it.
I'm not capable of
it. Oh, no.
Well, I know, but I can't.
Well, you have to look that up, Larry.
Could you just do a few bars?
Could you hum
a few bars for us?
Are you talking to Marie or Larry?
Marie.
No, I'm not capable of singing that song.
Okay.
I don't know it that well. I've simply heard it. Mm-hmm. I'd be delighted to sing some aria for you, but
thinking about actually doing this in our vegetable class. Next year in our vegetable class, we're going to have them sing, you know, La Traviata.
What's the title of the song?
It's something like Grandma's Canning.
Oh, Grandma's Canning. Okay. I'll see if I can find that. Thank you very much, Marie. Stay listening. We'll see what I can come up with.
I did want to point out to Marie, however, that I'm very careful in the canning, and during when I open up the jars, I do not see insects. I just want to point that out. I only see the reflection of the sun. That's all I see.
Bruce in Denmark. Hello, Bruce.
Hi. Greg Brown also did a great song called Sitting in a Cafe Counting Feed Caps that you might want to look up. My question, fellas, is I live in the summer. We have a garden up just north of Green Bay, and 2 years in a row now, my summer and winter squash has been wiped out by this icky white crud that grew right on the root. I mean, the plants look good, everything's going fine, and then kaboom. And yes, I did move the location of those plants this year. Last year, I even lost my cukes. This year, the cukes were fine. What is it, and what can I do?
Well, it was on the root itself and not on the leaves?
Correct.
So it wasn't powdery mildew.
Yeah, I was thinking it's a mildew, but it doesn't sound like
that. This is probably squash bug. You know, they hide right under the right near the roots. Especially if you have plastic or if you have any kind of mulch, they hide there, and they are just vociferous, you know, feeders, and they call
squash bugs. You're saying?
Yeah, I bet it's squash bug. You know, these are. It's funny. Every year is different, right, with regards to this last year, and remarkably, there were fewer of them.
Is this the same as the cucumber beetle? Or this is a different insect?
The cucumber beetle is, you know, they really don't cause much damage to cucumbers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they, you know, there's thousands of them. I mean, they can deform them a bit, but I don't think they really cause a lot of damage. They walk around on the flowers a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they sequester those terpenoids, right, which make them so incredibly bitter, which, you know, has caused a lot of relationship problems for some of our students. But
do you think squash bugs would cause that white?
I don't know. The white, you know, doesn't make any sense to me, but I mean, that's not something I'm familiar with, but I would guess that he's going to have to deal with, I bet it's an insect problem.
And for that, if they're hiding in mulch, you want to make sure you got rid of all the mulch.
Yeah,
and you'd certainly want to probably clean that garden out.
You're going to have to think about, his solution of doing the rotation was a logical one. The question is, you know, can you rotate far enough away? And can you rotate over years? You know, you may have to think about some control measures. And I can't recommend any, you know, specific death chemicals that you could apply, but there may be some organic control out there that might be functional. I know these critters are really hard to kill, and they come back and they bite us every year.
And maybe leaving that area fallow for a year, would that do any good, do you think?
Yeah, but then you make the sacrifice of not having cucumbers, squash, and pumpkins. So, you know, you have to weigh these things, right? I mean, I would say you may have to consider some environmentally compatible control measure, like stepping on them. Shouting, and if shouting will work, that is also a possibility.
I'd get rid of the mulch too. Mm-hmm. I'd probably.
You gotta have mulch, Larry.
No, but you think they're hiding by the mulch?
Well, if they're hiding in the mulch,
well, that's how they are. They're insidious little creatures, right? I mean, it's not like they are. You know, they don't stick out. They stick out those little feelers. You know, they laugh at you. The little insect laugh. You know, the little high pitched insect laugh. Have you seen those? They're so irritating.
Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman are vicars of vegetables. If you want to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on this edition of Garden Talk. We visit with Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman, our UW-Madison horticulture professors and the vicars of vegetables. We have Dan in Green Bay, who's up next. Dan, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to chime in on the old Greg Brown song.
Okay.
It's called Canned Goods.
Oh.
Great song. Marie just beat me to the punch calling it in. She's right. It is an awesome song.
I'm going to look it up online. And
I thought Dan might be right next to his guitar there. And might. Can you strum a few bars for us, Dan?
Well, let's see. We'll do it. We'll just do the lyrics, not the music. I don't want to kill anyone. Eating peaches on the shelf, potatoes in the bin. Come on, everybody. Come on in. Taste a little of the summer. Grandma put it all in a jar.
I love that.
Oh, and the canned goods that I buy in the store just ain't got the summer in them anymore. That's only a sampling. Great song.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like a great song. Well, you know, Jim Packard's quite a good singer. We might have to have him come in and sing that song. He's shaking his head. No way.
He brought his guitar.
buy a copy of the Yellow Dog album.
Yellow Dog album?
The Yellow Dog album.
All right. Thanks.
Sing that song, and I'll be on the air. I'll be waiting to hear him on the air singing it.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Thanks a lot for calling. So There you go. Greg Brown song, Canned Goods. On to Thomas in Manitowoc. Hi, Tom.
Hello. I know you do a lot of extensive research down in the roots out there, and I was just inquiring, will my rutabagas and turnips last longer if I wax them? And when I do wax them, do you wax the entire root?
Yeah, stick the whole thing in
sure.
the wax. Yeah, isn't that right, Irwin?
Oh, yeah, sure. It'll preserve them longer, absolutely.
Yeah, it keeps them moisture. Out. Yeah, prevents them from drying out.
Absolutely.
Okay, and then I wanted to ask one more thing. What is the ideal way of storing your garlic for the longest haul? Because it always gets the little green sprouts growing in there, and you have to cut them out because they're kind of bitter, you know?
Yeah. Know all about that. You store them in the refrigerator, Irwin?
I think most people have success storing them in a cool temperature, but not necessarily in the fridge. What about you, Larry?
Well, usually they don't. It doesn't last long enough. Usually we put it in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
And you know, by the time, you know, we go through it fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm. I think the secret is cool and dry.
Yeah, I think the root cellar. Yeah, I mean, if you can have temperatures that are down there between 35 and 40 degrees, you're going to have your best luck. But the refrigerator is usually too moist, too humid.
They can actually take it below freezing because I hang them in my garage.
Yeah.
And I know it gets down in the 20s.
Yeah.
And they still survive, but that sprouting process is pretty hard to deter around, end of February, March. They're pretty much all starting to get the little green sprouts.
Right. They'll break dormancy. And I mean, I think that's, you know, the only way that I've seen them prevented from breaking dormancy is the use of sprout inhibitors. And that's not necessarily something I'd recommend, but they do break dormancy during the winter, and then they will start to sprout. And that's true for all the alliums. It's true for onions as well.
It's amazing how cold tolerant actually garlic is.
Incredible.
I mean, you plant it in what, October, right? November, right? As long as the soil, it can be worked. You can plant garlic. Right?
Yeah,
I've already planted them in the end of January a couple of years ago when we had a really warm winter, and I thought, well, they're sprouting anyway. I might as well stick them in the ground, and they all grew well.
Yep, I bet.
Wait, I'm already thinking about February, right? And because February historically is when I start my leeks. That is like, is like the initiation of the new year for me. Like, I don't have a federal year or a calendar year. For me, it's February. The year starts in February. I plant my leeks, and then I wait so patiently for them to emerge because they're pretty slow. Mm-hmm. But I have enormous patience.
But what you're talking about is you're seeding the you're making a seedling, right?
Yeah.
You're making a transplant that you're going to take to the
field. Because I can't afford the ones that you buy, you know, at the store, you know, kind of an economic issue, you know what I mean?
So you actually start them from seed.
Absolutely.
Wow. Well, you're a better man than I am.
February. Now, Anne could do this, right? And, I mean, all she has to do is step outside, right outside of her root cellar. Mm-hmm. She's going to have a couple of neon lights, right? And a little space heater. She's going to, I know that Anne is going to have her garlic and her leek starting right in February.
Mm-hmm. No. Well, I'll tell you what. Becky has a haiku for you.
Heavens.
And it has to do with the rutabagas. And, you know, rutabaga is a tough one because it's four syllables to begin with. So, you know, you've only got one more syllable to work with.
It's not a challenge for our listeners, Larry.
No, Becky came up with a good one. Sweet rutabagas, carrots, and taters. Oh, she kind of goofed up there. My roots are in Wisconsin.
Ooh.
We could add a couple syllables on that, carrots and taters. We need two more syllables. But I like it anyway. Sweet rutabagas, carrots and taters. My roots are in Wisconsin. And Mama emails and says, rutabagas plain, not as bad as you think. Just add more butter.
All we have to do is add the word pasty, right, onto carrots and taters, right, and then you have the complete package in that haiku, if I can be so bold as to make that suggestion, Becky.
Cheryl in Bessemer, Michigan has something for us. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. A friend of mine is from England, and in England, they call rutabaggies Swedes, as in like Swedish Swedes.
That's right. They were domesticated, actually. They're really a Norwegian vegetable crop.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's just a strong affinity by people from very far northern Europe for that particular root vegetable. I think, again, it's something we've talked about on the show before, the idea of a storage vegetable in a very, very northern latitude. And so it makes complete sense.
How does that combine with lutefisk? Is there any, I mean, I don't know. I just can't imagine a plate. Now, to your left, right, the butter-filled mashed rutabaga. And to your right,
the lutefisk. Well, you know, they're good raw, too, with a little salt.
Little salt.
Yep. Just make a rutabaga.
See, we naturally assumed when we got your phone call that you were a UP person and that you might
have root salad a lot of different.
Now, is there any possibility you could send down that you could make something and send it down to us so we might be able to enjoy it over the holidays?
Well, I'll tell you
and
what.
Think warm thoughts about you.
I made 13 different kinds of jam.
Yeah.
No. 13?
And in the process of making many kinds of cookies.
Wow. You're not a lutefisk person, though, are you?
You know, I can't deal with that. I've tried.
Have you ever heard the song, O Lutefisk? It's done to the tune of O Christmas Tree.
Is this another
Jim
Greg
Packer
Brown?
Did sing that once on the show with Michael Feldman. And it's, how does it go? And think of I'm not going to sing it, but think of the O Christmas Tree or O Tannenbaum. O lutefisk, O lutefisk, how fragrant your aroma. O lutefisk, you put me in a coma. You smell so strong and look like glue and taste just like an overshoe. But lutefisk come Saturday. I think I'll eat you anyway.
Whoa.
I don't know how I dredged that up, but
where do we have?
Sure.
Do we have a guitar in here? Any possibility? You know, it is inspirational to think that recycled motor oil can be used right in such a uniquely culinary way.
Cheryl, thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. So Swedes.
Yep.
Swedes.
Swede.
All right. Well, John in Madison has a question. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I heard you guys talking about canning, and it reminded me that a while back I heard you guys talking on your show about dilly beans.
Oh, yeah.
Love them.
I had never heard of them before, actually. And my wife and I decided this summer we were going to give it a try. And we got out our first jar that we canned this summer from our garden on Thanksgiving and tried it out with the family, and it turned out great. Everybody loved them, so I just wanted to thank you guys for introducing me to the dilly beans.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
That's a great story.
That is an excellent story, and I thank you very much for calling. It's always nice to hear, you know, something you bring up and it actually works for somebody.
Because they're so crunchy. You know, they really have a good texture.
Great.
They have a good You know, my neighbor is from, of all places, Trinidad Tobago. Right?
He
is like, he came over, you know, he was in tears. And I thought, well, maybe he just reacted badly, right, to the dilly bean. But he came over and he said, Jim, this is most delicious food I ever eat. I ever eat in life. Right? I mean, he was like.
Really made him happy.
Yeah, whoa, yeah. And now, you know, I can't walk out the door without him waving and saying, do you have any more? You know? So I had to make a case just for him.
Oh, that's great. Man, that's great. John, thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate the call very, very much. Yeah, I spent a lot of time in Trinidad, and I can tell you
they like their pickled foods, right?
They like their pickled foods, but I never ate a dilly bean in Trinidad. Hmm. But
you know, dilly beans and curry.
Is it a good combination?
That's better than rutabaga and lutefisk, really, I would think. Yeah, so I would think that would. But I think because, you know, Trinidad has really a unique, eclectic mix of cuisines.
Oh, right? It's wonderful.
It's Indian and, you know, it's everything.
African,
it's just an amazing array of things. So I can see why the dilly bean would go for them because they really, you know, because my neighbor would really be accustomed to having sort of pickled things and whatever. But you know, it's just a string bean with texture. You know, it's a true snap bean.
Yes,
so that's
right.
What makes it so wonderful.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Frank in Port Edwards has a comment or question. Hi, Frank.
Good morning.
Morning.
Before I get to the question, I want to pass something along that might be something somebody else might want to use. I have a cold room in my basement where I keep things like parsnips and onions and so on. So
yeah.
Whoa.
But what I did, I went to Home Depot, and I imagine you can get them somewhere else, and got a couple of crawl space ventilators. Now, these deals have a thermostatic device, mechanical,
mm-hmm.
Which opens and closes the louvers according to the temperature. And you can adjust that to whatever temperature you want. I stuck those in my window, and they work very well, and they're pretty inexpensive. They cost like, I don't know, $15 or $20 a piece. And it works really well.
Hmm. Is that to vent the excess moisture, or?
Well, you can open the window when you want it to cool down, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't have a mental image there of that.
So what it's giving you, this would normally be a room that would be heated to the temperature of your house, but by using this to open the window, you can bring the temperature down. Is that how it works?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. Oh,
perfect. Mm-hmm. You had that's a great idea, and you had another question, I believe, too.
I have problems with beets.
Okay.
I get some that are the size you would expect, but I get far too many that are barely bigger than marbles, and I don't know what the heck is wrong.
How far apart are you planting them?
I thin them to a good 3 inches apart.
Well, you're thin.
But I'm wondering, is it possible that I don't plant the seeds deep enough, some of them?
That's usually not an issue. The thinning is the first thing that I'd ask, and Larry asked it, that making sure you have enough space between them. If you're getting some that are a good size, and it sounds like you are, then it rules out another thing I was going to suggest, which is boron. Beets have an unusually high requirement for boron. I mean, it's unusual for vegetables. It's the only vegetable that has that. So you need to make sure that you have enough of that in your soil in order to produce a crop. But it sounded from your comment that you had some that were decent size. Is that right?
That's correct.
So that is what's so curious.
Don't you think he's probably getting late germination out of those fruits, right, with the multiple seeds?
It could be.
I bet that's it.
That's a great point. You know, the seed ball is actually it's an aggregate fruit. It actually can produce up to seven different seedlings from a single seed ball. And sometimes they are delayed in emerging. You know, you'll get none of them will come up initially, and then they'll come up later. So I think Jim's right that sometimes three or four weeks after the other ones come up, you'll get some coming up.
And that's obviously 3-4 weeks.
That makes
a
big difference.
A lot of time.
It makes a big difference. So it could be that.
I like that. I like that answer. I think that's probably a pretty good one because the boron's probably okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
But that's what we can think of, anyway.
It's the only thing that comes to mind here. Thank you, Frank, for calling. By the way, I haven't given the number here in a while. Let me do that again. 1-800-642-1234. If you'd like to join in today as we visit with our Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman. John and Wilmot up next. Hi, John.
How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Hey, yeah, you know, you were talking before about root cellars and that. I found what works handy for me is I use the space between my inner and outer door of my walkout on my basement.
Oh.
It maintains about 35 degrees in there, even in the coldest temperature. And, I've never had to pack any of my roots in sawdust or sand or anything. Most of the time I just leave them right in the bushel baskets with the dirt still on them. And then I'll cover them up with a damp towel, and then periodically just re-dampen the towel, and that works pretty good. Hmm.
You know, I hadn't thought about it. I've got that very setup in my home.
How much space is between the doors?
My doors, I've probably got about 10 feet between the doors, and it's probably about 4 feet wide. Also, I think it's important to point out, too, for people that want to store vegetables, to make sure that you get the proper kind for storing. Not all carrots are good for long-term storage. Yeah. I've had good luck with I believe they're the Damber half-longs.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the beets go, I believe I planted those the Detroit Reds or Globes or whatever the heck they're called.
Detroit Dark Reds.
Yeah, they work out pretty good. I got a buddy of mine up in the UP there, Big Jim. He's got a cat named Detroit. he does a lot of canning and cold storage himself. Listen, boys, I got to run. I got to get back to work here. I'm picking up garbage over here in Burlington. You guys have a good afternoon and happy holidays and a wonderful solstice to everybody.
What a cool
Thanks,
guy.
John. Whoa. Thank you, John. The same to you. Right back at you. Thank you so much. That was a great call. Well, they're all good calls, actually. Gail in Fish Creek, it's on to you. Hi, Gail.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was listening earlier about... The people that were calling about the bugs in the mulch and all with eating the squash and things. And I have found with doing some of my yard work and that in doing different mulches and stuff, I found that eucalyptus mulch worked really well with keeping the ants away from my house because I had a cedar house at the time.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if you guys, Bing Dogs here, would know if that eucalyptus in the mulch would help with keeping the bugs away from the vegetable gardens as well. Any other kind of bugs other than just the ants?
I don't know, but I would love to walk around in your garden.
Oh.
Can you mention the? I mean, you'd never get a cold.
Yeah, it is great, except when you're placing it down, it can be really overwhelming. I've overdone it.
I just didn't even realize that we had an abundance of eucalyptus available in Wisconsin to use as mulch.
Yeah, you have to really search to find it, but it really worked. And I was wondering if you guys had any experience with
anything that would keep the cold away from me, and it must frighten those insidious little creatures, right?
I would think there could well be some something to that the eucalyptus, I don't know. Well, do insects smell? Insects don't really smell.
But they're repelled by volatile organic compounds, though.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Somehow
sure.
They can sense them, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be like the oil that would be in there, like excess oil? Because eucalyptus.
You know, the bottom line, Gail, is that you've got something that works and apparently have access to something that almost no one, which is an abundance of eucalyptus mulch.
Yeah, that is unusual.
I don't know. And if you give any more details, your house is going to be, people are just going to be flocking to your home.
They're going to be wondering how it works.
Yeah. Now, do you have a root cellar? Is there any possibility? Do some canning. I mean, think of her canning room. She probably lines it with eucalyptus, right? I mean, it's probably, don't you just have visions of her canning room? It's just going to be amazing. I want to come visit.
Okay.
All right, Gail, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman are Vicars of Vegetables here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have some more haikus. Mama came back with another haiku for us. And this one, Jim's getting ready here. Plants sleeping snugly.
Plants sleeping snugly.
Maybe we could say snuggly.
Snuggly.
That would give us five.
Okay.
Sleeping snugly. Oh, snugly. Oh, wait a minute. That is five. Plants sleeping snugly underneath the snow so white.
Oh, heavens.
Will the spring come soon?
Underneath the snow so white, will the spring come soon?
Well, we're not even to the first day of winter yet.
I know, but this is so lyrical, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, could we, you know, the only, you, if you combine
eucalyptus
with this, that would be the eucalyptus smell from my, no, well, I'm sorry.
And
thank you, Cheryl.
And that was Mama.
And
Jeff in Rhinelander emails and wants to know what's the difference between rutabaga and kohlrabi.
Oh.
Well, they're two different.
They're different species.
Same family, though.
Same family, same genus. They're both brassicas.
Right.
Kohlrabi is more of a above ground, you know, grows a little bit more above ground. It's light green, has a more of a hypocotyl tissue.
It's a stem.
Yeah.
I mean, think of what happened here, right? We talk about this in our class, right? I mean, we had this leafy thing growing on the shores of, you know, England and Portugal, right? This leafy, waxy thing. The Italians get it, right? And they domesticate out of that. They domesticate out the flowers, and they make broccoli and cauliflower. Right? Northern Europeans get it, and they say, you know, wrap those big, luscious leaves, right, around the stem, and we're going to make a cabbage. They make cabbage and Brussels sprouts. Other people actually use the leaf, right, because that's – then you have kale, which I do not consider a vegetable, and collards, right, which is, you know, kind of a passable vegetable. But then there was one other tissue that you could – I mean, there are several other tissues, but someone said – you know, can you just imagine Neolithic, you know, man and woman looking out at this plant, right? And one of them turns to the other and says, I bet you can't make a vegetable out of the stem, you know? And so I, you know, and, you know, I bet I can, you know, we'll do it. And so they, so someone says, you know, starts selecting for, you know, a stem that sort of expands, and that that becomes kohlrabi.
Yeah,
but it's actually it's you can think of kohlrabi as just a you know, like someone stuffed the Brussels sprouts back into the plants, and then the thing just kind of expanded right around the middle, right? You know, kind of a middle-aged bulge there, right? That's kind of kohlrabi, and the and the rutabaga is you know is a true root, so it's not a stem.
I would say the kohlrabi is also a little bit better as a fresh raw vegetable than the rutabaga as well.
Yeah,
but apparently you know we've been told that we in the UP you can just salt it, and and if you put a layer put two layers of that with a little thin layer of lutefisk, apparently, which caller was that? She apparently you know really likes it.
Lucille in Green Bay, on to you. Hi, Lucille.
Hi, I'm just listening to you about kohlrabi and rutabaga, and kohlrabi is good raw or just cooked and mashed with salt and pepper, and rutabaga is absolutely delicious. But anyways, that's not my question. My question is beets. One fellow was saying that some were little and some were big. Now, I have two garden plots, and I switch them back and forth every year. And when I plant my rows north-south, my beets get really big and nice. And when I plant them east-west, I have little itty-bitty marble-sized beets and or carrots.
You're a biodynamic gardener.
Can you explain that? Is there, you think that makes
sense? Well, so north and south, it does better than east and west, eh?
Yeah.
Well, doesn't the sun rise in the east and set in the west? I mean, don't we have these things? You know, there are those who feel that, you know, that you can, this is called the biodynamic approach to gardening, right?
Yeah.
There are a lot of other kind of weird aspects of this as well, right? But they actually plant their rows to align with the celestial heavens. Huh? Now, I think that's, you know, the fact that they have a spiritual sense of growing the vegetables inspires me. On the other hand, I don't feel that those stars are contributing a lot of photons, right?
Well, I don't know. Or,
so I'm questioning their contribution, right? As we convert the micro-Einsteins into sugars, I'm questioning whether or not there's a really, truly significant effect of that.
The sunlight wouldn't have, I mean, the sunlight on that would have no effect on beets. I mean, it's not like east and west or north and south. That wouldn't make any difference.
On the other hand,
now, do you do this every other year?
Well, yeah. And every other year, when I plant them north and south, I get beautiful beets and beautiful carrots. I mean, and I use the same brand every year. It's Dark Detroit and what's the carrot's name?
Do you,
I can't remember.
Do you fertilize and do the same thing every year?
Every year I get manure from my nephew. It's, you know, with nothing in it. He's an organic farmer. And I put that on the garden. I till it in. Or shovel it in, you know, and then I plant my, I let it go for a couple weeks, and then I plant the garden. But whenever I do the north-south, I get good, you know.
I was trying to think of some cultural thing, cultural practice that you might be doing differently that would then lead to that.
No,
or...
this is entirely a spiritual event.
I have no idea, and I tell you what, Jim and Irwin don't either, I don't think.
No, I'm inspired by the spirituality.
Maybe somebody else, stay listening, Lucia. We'll see if we can get somebody else to, why would the beets do better when planted north and south, then planted east and west?
There's not a slope.
Well,
is there a slope in your garden?
No, it's all flat.
Oh.
Well, I mean, the sun, I mean, you could be, you know, I mean, well, there is a certain logic, right, in the shading of it.
Well, it's
on the
same
other hand, I reject that.
You know, in the same area. Yeah. Yeah. It's just when I go that way or if I go that way.
I think, you know, I'm fully inspired by the fact that this is a spiritual mystery, which really is an important component of vegetable growing.
Oh. And so stay listening, Lucille, because we may have an answer for you. Someone else may have an idea as to what, but
clearly,
I know
we
it's
do
some
not.
Cultural
sure.
thing.
Sure.
Clearly, we don't. Here's Ron from Duluth came in with another haiku.
Ooh.
And his haiku is a garden one, of course, and it has to do with dilly beans. So, a neighborly gift, dilly bean, oh dilly bean,
Trinidadic
joy.
I wonder if that's my neighbor who wrote that in. But.
Well, it's Ron from Duluth that came in with that one. All right. So he was inspired by your story about your neighbor.
Well, it was just so surprising to me because, you know, initially I was so frightened. I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, but it is greatest food ever.
Well, now, Sandra has also emailed and said, and I kind of agree with her, how dare you not give the recipe for those to die for dilly beans.
Oh, that could be done.
Hey, that's easy. Vinegar, a little sugar, garlic. I put in a hot pepper and a little salt. That's it.
Well, is there anything like, is it 2 cups of vinegar to?
Oh, I don't know the proportions. You know, I just kind of let it fly. You know what I mean? You gotta.
So you fill the jar with.
You gotta go
vinegar?
With the flow. No, you boil. What you do is you stuff the jar with the beans. I just take the beans. I wash them. I stuff the jar with the beans, and then I boil this mixture, and it's salt and garlic and hot peppers and vinegar and a little water. I mean, the pH is about 4, right? And you pour that over the top, and then you hot water bath it for about 10 minutes, and that's it. Honest to God, I can go to my basement immediately upon returning home and crack open a jar of sunshine, of green sunshine.
And I noticed you didn't bring any along.
Whoops, yeah.
Sharon in Shatek, there you go. Thank
Gentlemen,
you for hi.
I'm sitting here laughing, so I thought I better call you.
No good.
Number one, you go look at any farm, I'll bet you any farm, but I'm sure I'll be wrong in some cases. A good farmer plants his rows north and south. I've never heard of planting a garden east and west, but I suppose some might have to. But there's a difference. I don't think it's spiritual. I think it's Mother Nature and God, and I think that's how that works. So just remember that part of it.
Well, you see, you said Mother Nature
and God. The other thing
so
is...
So there is that, a spiritual component there.
beets, according to Organic Gardening, Robert Rodale.
My hero.
Beets are the barometer of your soil. If you want to know what's wrong with your soil, you plant a row of beets. And how they react to your soil will tell you what you need. So obviously, if they're not all the same size, there's something wrong there. They're either not thinned properly, or there's something missing in that soil.
Yeah.
Or something there that shouldn't be. But anyway, that's what those are.
Mm-hmm.
And in... hate to say this. I went to grade school in the mid-40s, and we are about 30 miles from Cumberland, Wisconsin.
Oh.
We ate raw rutabagas.
Yeah?
Every day. The ladies would peel them and French fry cut them. I think they used knives. I don't think they had a cutter.
No,
and there
not.
Would be just big dish panfuls, and if you didn't like what the main meal was, you grabbed a handful of rutabagas and some salt, and that's what you had.
No, this was it.
This
was a reward.
In your grade school.
Yeah, this was a reward for being a good student. It wasn't as if you were being punished.
Well, I still like raw ones. I don't like them cooked at all. But
what
I
about
like
a little salt? Try the salt?
That's all you need, just like a radish.
I've eaten them raw all the time. I actually did some of my PhD research was done in Cumberland.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, my community development study.
I won't even ask what you were studying. But
well, we were studying how people make decisions
yeah.
and take actions that affect their community. And so studied Cumberland and Barron, Wisconsin, and Neillsville. Those were three communities I looked at.
And, you know, the contrast between those three communities that he did not even cite in his PhD dissertation was
vegetable grown. Each one of those, and you're right, they are very different, but they're very community-minded up here in Barron County.
But that was
something that we lived through, but I think you'll find if you check out a good productive farm, you will find that usually the rows will go north
and south. On that note, I have to remind everyone that we are visiting today with the Vicars of Vegetables. Jim Nienhuis, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture, Gardening Haiku Poet, Irwin Goldman, also a UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture, and they are with us here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mealer here on this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman, UW-Madison Professors of Horticulture. Great to have them back, and thank you so much for listening in. Question, give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And I want to go back to that dilly bean recipe because... I just went online. I think something is missing from that dilly bean recipe, and dill was missing.
You know, I thought they asked the recipe for the acetic acid bean.
Yeah, not
the vinegar bean. I gave the vinegar bean, and I didn't. I'm sorry. Did they want the dilly bean recipe?
Yeah,
some people actually add some dill.
Yeah, I think that's probably not a bad idea. You probably have equal amounts of water and vinegar, white vinegar, and you put a cup of pickling salt in, and you got, maybe 8 heads of fresh dill weed. And
garlic?
You got
garlic. Don't forget the garlic.
All garlic.
You got a little mustard seed maybe. You put some chili peppers in there.
Also sugar.
Sugar,
in many recipes, you'll find you use a
maybe
little sugar.
Maybe alum.
No, not on the dilly bean.
Oh, you use alum?
Sugar? A lot of people. You know, but really, the recipe is sort of incidental. I agree that the dilly bean should have a little dill. You know, it's not a big deal, but if you want it, okay.
I think you better have it.
Okay. But, you know, really, it's all about stacking the beans.
That's
in
the thing.
Jar. It's all about making that. It's like.
It's an engineering thing.
That's exactly right. It's all about, and it's all about the presentation of the actual jarred product.
Yeah. They're vertically stacked in there, right?
They're stunningly beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a dilly bean symmetry that is just, you know, wonderful.
And actually, you know, if the drink, the Bloody Mary drink, which is vodka and orange juice, vodka and tomato juice.
Yeah, doesn't it have celery in it?
Yeah, but people often put dilly beans in. Hmm. In there, and I can attest that
that works okay.
It works okay.
What's that you're sipping on right now, Larry?
There? Mark in Brussels. Let's go to you. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I was wondering if those an ethylene gas neutralizers are worth the price for keeping vegetables fresh in your refrigerator. It looks like they're just made up these like little pieces of charcoal or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're ethylene gas scrubbers?
Ethylene gas neutralizer.
Yeah, they scrub.
Mm-hmm. You put them in there and they're supposed to keep your vegetables longer by absorbing...
If you order now, do you get two of those along with some with the Propeel Fisherman and the steak knives?
Yeah, I wonder. Well, now there may be. Is there any truth to that, Irwin, do you think? Yeah,
frightening thing is that there is a minuscule amount of truth and a giant amount of mythology would be my guess.
Yeah, I think that's right. And when I think about the things that are the biggest generators of ethylene, I often think they're things we don't refrigerate, right? So your bananas, your avocados.
Cherimoya.
Yeah, I mean, the things that the...
Figs.
A lot of those things I don't refrigerate. So if you were to put a scrubber like that on the counter, it's competing with all that air in the kitchen. I don't know how effective it would be. It'd be very interesting to look at it in a fridge.
It's one of those things that has a science base.
A little bit of science.
A little bit of science. unfortunately, a very little bit of science.
Well, you know, we had an email from Barb who said, this is on the rows, planted mm-hmm. north, south, and east, west. Mm-hmm. She says, rows planted north, south get even amounts of sun on both sides. Rows planted east, west only get sun on their south sides.
Okay.
I detect a little skepticism here among the professors.
You know, we are not here to dispute this at all. I mean, I would say if it makes you happy to do it that way, then do it that
do it
way.
That way.
You know?
All right.
If you think it's going to affect the amount of micro Einsteins being converted into, six carbon sugars, then go for it.
Go for it. All right. And Joanne is responding to Sandra, who had said, well, how about the recipe? And we sort of gave a recipe, but there were some things left out, and the amounts were vague.
I left out one thing.
Joanne says, I've just done this myself, if you just Google or go on a search engine and Google hot dilly beans, many recipes show up. And she's exactly right about that. So, Sandra, I hope you do that.
What kind of pepper do you use?
You know, I grow those terrific, those ahi peppers.
Oh, yeah.
And even though they're not mature at the time of the snappings, they still have, enough capsaicin in them mm-hmm. that will, go into solution. And
if you didn't have the ahi, what could a listener use? A jalapeno?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, any pepper. I mean, but mm-hmm. I think that particular combination, the acidity with the, a little bit of capsaicin, and then you've got the green bean, and it's also, and as we said, it's the beauty of the structure of the jar, it's just the beautiful symmetry of it, and the fact that you're processing them for such a small amount, I mean, because the preservative is acetic acid, it's not heat, mm-hmm. right? That they still maintain that crunch to them, and that's mm-hmm. what makes them so terrific in Larry's cocktail.
There we go, Mike in Elk Mound. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Good afternoon. I waited for about 20 minutes or so.
Ooh.
Anyway, question. The gooseberry and the currant bushes that you buy from a nursery,
yep.
do they have the capabilities of harboring the rust fungus that affects the white pine trees? And if they do, how far away would you have to have them planted?
A long ways.
What's a long ways?
I think they do.
You see, Mike.
And here I am not the expert, but Irwin.
Neither are we. Jim, maybe you know.
Oh, yes, I know how to answer this question. the gooseberry and currant should not be grown. And you should mulch them under completely and grow vegetables.
Well, aside from that, I think there's a problem, and I'm not sure of the distance, but that was an airborne.
That's a good question.
It's an airborne kind of thing. It's not something that passes roots. So if it's airborne, it's going to travel a long ways. So we should probably do – I should – see if I can do a little research on that one. I'll try and put something up on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show here in the next few days. We'll try and get an answer. So gooseberries and currants that you buy at the store or what have you, will they affect the white pine? That's the question. Mm-hmm. And somebody else may have a precise answer, Mike. I suspect they do. But we'll find out. Stay with us. Stay listening. Kendall in Bristol, we'll go to you. Hi, Kendall. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah. Hi. I had a question on, pardon me, crop rotation.
Sure.
I understand the logic of rotating crops in the sense that they're pulling certain minerals out of the soil. But I was also wondering whether it's a soil-borne or an airborne issue in terms of, are we talking about preventing bacteria, fungus, or mold? And then
all of the above.
Yeah, everything.
And what about, first of all, how many years should you have in between? And what about related crops like potatoes and tomatoes?
My recommendation would be to look at the families themselves, because often the path, really the rotation is more about controlling pests, right, and diseases than it is worrying about you know, depleting, you know, the nutrients in the soil, wouldn't you say, Erwin? Mm-hmm. And so I would look at how the, you know, how the families are rotated. I rotate on an Alliaceae, you know, a Cucurbitaceae, Solanaceae kind of a rotation, and I do it on a 3-year rotation. Now, you know, for some diseases are you're never going to eliminate. Once they're in the soil, you're never going to eliminate them. And others you can. Rotation can be pretty effective. But you know, but you'll drive down the level of inoculum. So rotation is always going to make sense. What do you think, Erwin?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think a lot, you know, your question is a great one, and it absolutely depends on what you're interested in planting, and it depends on which families you have and which pests you have.
Okay, and then the other question would be, if you're in a situation where you have a limited amount of sunlight, so you garden in a container, can you grow the same, you know, if you want tomatoes, can you grow the same crop year after year as long as you give it fresh soil and clean the container?
Sure, sure. I do it.
Okay.
You actually grow those upside down ones, don't you?
Have you given up on that? I didn't grow the upside down
this past year.
Although I had four large containers for tomato plants. And this year I actually applied a little fertilizer to those, and I was amazed about once a month, tablespoon or so in the pot, what a difference that made in my crop this year as compared to last year.
Now, did you use the topsy-turvy?
No, I did not use it. It's still in the basement.
Okay. That's one of the Christmas presents. It's like that tie you'll never wear. Like, why would you? I don't understand the topsy-turvy. Mm-hmm. And I think of those folks who are out there growing north, south, east, west. There are people who are growing them upside down, right?
Well, it's fun to talk about. It's always fun to talk about.
You know, and especially when you've got the cocktail, at, you know, there's no doubt about it. It's fun to talk about.
Thanks, Kendall. Matt in Spooner, we're on to you. Hi, Matt.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, I got a question about some sand and pretty much glacial till. I'm kind of in between places. My kid's pretty adamant about this garden.
Okay.
I've got about, I got a small amount of topsoil to work with. But this is rocks and sugar sand. I mean, its previous crop is knapweed and bull thistle.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. And I was kind of wondering if chemical fertilizers might kind of get us something out of this.
What probably would get you the best is a raised bed.
Well, the thing is like, I'm not going to be here that long.
Okay.
So I was just kind of wanting to, if I could, I was thinking like tomatoes and stuff, I just take a couple big scoops out of the, and replace it with black dirt.
I would get some of Betsy's eucalyptic mulch, right? And I would definitely, you know, raised beds are a lot of work, right? I mean, but it might work. But if he's under glacial till, he's got great drainage already, right?
Right, right.
So I would say, on a situation where you've got great drainage, why don't you just, in the end, the chemical fertilizers will provide nitrogen, which is going to be a problem. But I would add mulch, and I always add a little nitrate, right, to my mulch, because I know that mulch is, you know, tying up a lot of that. You know, those amino acids, right, and those little bacteria.
Uh-huh.
So and they're breaking it up. But I would say you got great drainage, go for mulch, and I would add, and if I were going to add some of an amendment, I would look for some sort of nitrogen source. I mean, and if you're kind of like the organic guy, you know, get the bone meal or the, you know, the ox blood or whatever it is, you know, whatever they use. I don't know what it is. But anyway, put some of that down.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then plant north, south.
Oh, and I had a little comment on the beets.
Yeah.
Did you guys, I don't know, I didn't hear anybody question anybody about the top growth. I was wondering if maybe his beets, they were a little too aggressive with the nitrogen there.
And yeah,
it was causing them to be small and...
Well, some were big and some of the beets were large and the ones right next to it were small. That's the issue.
But can't you make a terrific kimchi out of beet leaves?
I don't see why not.
Yeah, wouldn't that be terrific?
You could ferment them, sure.
You know, I mean, if they're a little bit too small to harvest, I would just chop them off. I would roll them, put them into jars, and I would make up essentially the beet leaf dilly bean.
I'll tell you what, Matt. John in Eau Claire's coming up next, and he's got a comment on Rose and Son. So stay listening here. Let's go to John. John, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes, here I am.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Are you hearing me? The person who called in about north and south and east and west differences.
Yeah.
It's an absolute truth to that. North and south does capture the first rays and first half of the day from the east and then from the west. If you measure the illumination like this on row crops, it's an absolute reality. I'm a forestry scientist, retired at the moment, but countless experiments in row crops, particularly trees, seedlings, going north-south, you can see the growth, the height differences immediately.
Yes.
So the illumination here for row crops, it does make sense.
All right. For row crops, it makes sense.
Yes.
All right. Well, obviously, you've had a look at some of the research, and you've obviously you've observed it yourself.
I have done it myself. I am sitting in a car right now, so I can't cite references, but they do exist. Of course, I have had an opportunity to study extensively this kind of situation.
All right.
Various angles of solar radiation on various angles of planting of crops, of row crops and so forth, and unmistakably there are differences in crops, of course, that can benefit from additional solar energy.
I'm totally convinced.
Thank you. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, John. So there is a difference, and there's been research on it, and the research has come up with significant differences. So there, take that. And
okay, wow.
I'm going to...
What about the topsy-turvy, you know what I mean? Come on. Let's put the upside-down one.
Betsy has a haiku, and it involves eucalyptus.
Oh, God bless her.
And here it is. Best tip of the day. Eucalyptus scented mulch keeps the bugs away.
Hey, that's pretty clever. God bless you, Betsy. That's pretty cool. Thank you.
I like that one.
Wow.
Best tip of the day, eucalyptus scented mulch keeps the bugs away.
You know, and she actually obeyed the rules on that one as well. Not only is it lyrical and inspirational, it's actually
575.
It's actually technically correct.
Yeah, there you go.
Betsy, you've done it all.
Lorraine and Merrill, your turn. Hi.
Yes, I have the recipe for dilly beans.
Okay.
This is for 7 pints.
Okay.
And you can leave the beans in lengths as tall as the jar.
Okay.
And in the bottom of the jar, you put 1 teaspoon of crushed red pepper, 1/4 teaspoon alum, 1/2 teaspoon mustard seed, 1 clove garlic and 1 onion slice and dill and 1 jalapeno pepper slice.
Ah.
Then you add the beans to the jar.
Yeah.
Then you mix 5 cups of apple cider vinegar, 5 cups of water, and 1/2 cup of canning salt.
Yeah.
You heat the vinegar and water and salt until the salt dissolves. Then you pour it over the beans. And then you put the covers on and boil in hot water bath for 10 to 15 minutes, and the beans will be ready in about 6 weeks.
There you go. And that's is that fairly close to what you do?
It's almost identical. I don't know about the dill thing.
Yeah, we want the dill.
If you don't put dill in it, they're not dilly beans.
Well, I thought they asked for vinegar beans. You know, I got confused on that one. And you're right. Can't you? I mean, I'm gonna bike home. Well, no, I can't. I don't bike on the ice. Sorry about that. I'm gonna walk home. I'll jog home. And walk at a rapid pace. And I'm gonna crack open a jar of those babies tonight.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Lorraine. Thank you for calling and for the recipe. And Mary and Merrill, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Yeah, from Merrill.
Yes.
And I don't know if this has to do with the beets. But I'd like to mention what I have learned from north and south rows and east and west.
Yeah.
John was right on the button with it.
Mm-hmm.
We used to raise a lot of strawberries, and when our rows were east and west, the south side of the row matured first, and then we had to wait and pick the other
side.
the north side later. So we planted the rows up in north and south. Then we could harvest the whole crop at one time.
At the same time. There you have it. Another example.
Another testimonial.
I'm being won over. Really, I don't think
actually, yeah. And I'm thinking about my garden. The biggest garden that I ever had, by chance, was north and south, and it was a great garden. It was 60 feet long and 15 feet wide.
Wow!
And I because of just the property or the land I had, it was north and south. I'm thinking about that right now, and that was a great garden. Lots of canned. I'd can 50 quarts of sort of a V8 tomato juice every year, and I always figured about a quart a week of that. And
do you think Wisconsin leads the nation in percentage of homes that can vegetables?
Canning?
Huh? I mean, we're leaders in so many things.
That's an interesting,
right? But I bet we're leaders in that.
Could be. Mary, thank you very much. Wanda in Forest Junction, your turn. Hi, Wanda.
Hi again. Hey, that fellow that said he had limited soil and he wasn't going to be at that place too long, he wanted to grow stuff. I went on YouTube and found what they call a grow bucket. And the 5-gallon pails, you can get them from the bakery or whatever, very, very cheaply. And one bucket goes inside the other. There's a cutting pattern for a cup that goes in the middle for wicking up the water that'll be in the bottom there, and bottom of bucket, you know, the outside bucket.
Yeah.
And it has the soil configuration, what fertilizer, how to cover it, and he will grow fantastic plants, not to mention that they're very portable, so he can pick them up and move them from here to there. Where?
Because he's on the glacial till, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Why not? So they're called grow buckets.
Yes, and I found them on YouTube.
Well, I will take a look at that. Thank you for calling. And Julie in Eau Claire, hi to you. Hi, Julie.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I have a girlfriend who introduced me to the wonderful world of boxing or canning by using a box.
Ah.
Hey, now.
Have you ever heard of that?
Can you give it to us in about 30 seconds or
canning
so?
With boxing.
I'll do my best. You make a huge vat of salsa. You have your just out of the dishwasher jars. Pour the salsa in. You put the lids on, you tip them over, upside down in a box, tons of towels over it, let them set for about an hour, it seals them, flip them back over, and you're done. And you have...
She went
like
a little quickly
said,
there for me.
Summer in the jar.
See,
summer in the jar.
I was still focusing on changing the name from canning to boxing.
Okay, so you make the salsa, got it hot, turn it upside down in a box, and kind of cover with a cloth that apparently will keep the heat. I'm not sure what the recommendation. You know, of course, it's salsa.
You don't want to give these out to friends or family. I would. You know, I would look for, you know, enemies.
I'd be putting some lemon juice or something in there for sure for preservative. I don't know about that one. But Julie says it works. And Jim and Irwin know a lot about things working and some that don't work. And I'm glad to have them along. And I hope you guys, well, they'll be back. We'll have them again. The Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman will be back. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.